From NPR, it's Latino USA. We dig in today, deep into the protests and the inflamed words in our country. And we try to make sense of it with people you don't usually hear from.
I think it is growing pain. As a society, as a culture, we are growing. And then in moments of anxiety, it pops up in these legislations in Arizona, in the sentiments against the cultural center near the Ground Zero.
Iranian-American professor Hamid Dabashi, writer Kai Wright from Colorlines.com, and playwright of Real Women Have Curves, Josefina Lopez, on the malaise and the hope.
When I turn on the news and I hear about all the people that are being killed and murdered and massacred and all the horrible things that happen and all the deaths, I stop and I go, wait a minute, how come they're not reporting all the babies that have been born? So that always gives me hope. I think about babies.
That's coming up. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us.
And now some notes on the news. I'm Katie Davis. The country is concerned with work this Labor Day weekend. So many people here need work, and there is not enough to go around right now. And the anxiety grows, and lately it is pushing some people out of the country. The Pew Hispanic Research Center said this week that unauthorized immigration to the United States is down sharply by 8%. In March 2009, there were 11.1 million undocumented immigrants. That is down from a peak of 12 million in 2007. Pew Research says this is the first significant drop over the past two decades. In New Orleans these past days, people are remembering Katrina 5 years later. Some stood along the river and the levees that broke. They placed their hands and leaned into the levees to pray. President Barack Obama was in New Orleans to mark the fifth anniversary of the flooding of the city. He spoke of the work done and the work still needing to be done to restore New Orleans. Obama spoke at Xavier, an historically black university, in a city that is still missing much of its black population. There are new residents, though, especially Latinos. They came to help rebuild the city and, in many cases, were recruited. The Latino population in New Orleans jumped from 4.4% to 6.6%. This population shift is causing unease, just as it is in other parts of the country. In the past weeks in New Orleans, community organizers held a conference to identify the points of conflict. Another is planned this fall to help build alliances between African Americans and Latinos. And then there are the Vietnamese. They were some of the first to rebuild after Katrina. We turn now to a reporter who wrote about this for New America Media. Ngoc Nguyen has this snapshot of how the younger generation of Vietnamese in New Orleans are remaking their community with the lessons of Katrina.
5 years ago, Vietnamese fishermen wrote out Katrina huddled together in their church, Mary Queen of Vietnam. Afterward, they took out loans, rebuilt their homes and businesses, and paid back the money. That meant that fishing towns from Barris, Louisiana to Bayou La Batre, Alabama stayed intact. A hub of Vietnamese Americans in New Orleans bounced back, too. Residents from the neighborhood of Versailles were among the first to return after the storm. A shared history and religion drew them back at first, but they knew they needed more than that. They set out to restore vital services by building a health clinic and a school. And Katrina gave the Vietnamese community a different view of government. They came to believe that politicians are not those who govern, but those who serve. They are more assertive and able to make their needs known and get them addressed. That's especially true of a new crop of leaders, the sons and daughters of Versailles, who lived through the hurricane. After Katrina, 25-year-old Minh Nguyen founded a youth group for Versailles residents. The group recently traveled to Washington to fight for a better claim system in the wake of the BP oil spill. And he's helping his parents reinvent their livelihoods. Min's father is a crabber in Barris, Louisiana, and his mother sells the catch to buyers. But Min's father hasn't worked for months, and his mother now makes $10 an hour working in a BP cafeteria, not even enough to pay for gas, Min says. They hope to use their claim money to buy land and build a gas station in Barris. For right now, they want to stay put, he says. They want to return to fishing, but that will depend on what testing of Gulf seafood turns up. The younger generation sees other possibilities if fishing doesn't work out. Tap Bui, a community organizer, says the fishermen could be retrained for green jobs, like weatherizing homes and restoring the wetlands, putting to use skills they already have. For Latino USA, I'm Ngoc Nguyen.
To read the entire story on Vietnamese Americans and the lessons of Katrina, go to our website, latinousa.org, and you'll find a link to New America Media. And we'll end today with a few lines from a poem by Lee Herrick, A Thousand Saxophones. Sometime tonight, think of water, how it purifies or terrifies, cleanses, gives, and takes away. Think how fast some things can rise. Water, fear, the intensity of a prayer. Officials in New Orleans said they want to save the living, and I hope they do, but I hope they can also honor the dead. On Bourbon Street, there were over 3,000 musicians employed on any given day. Last night before I fell asleep, I imagined what 1,000 saxophones would sound like if they all played together. You can read the entire poem, 1,000 Saxophones, on our website, latinousa.org. And that's also where you can stay connected throughout the week or follow us on Twitter, where we're LatinoUSA, all one word. Maria's back in 30 seconds. I'm Katie Davis in Washington, D.C.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. It feels like that summer boardwalk game, you know, the one where you whack-a-mole and then it pops up. But in this case, we're talking about hate. Some hateful act pops up and you try to smash it down. Then over there, there's another one. Wham! But wait, there's another one. And then more pop up. That's what the past months have been like here in this country. People are trying hard to stop a Muslim cultural center near Ground Zero. Laws were passed and proposed passed, giving police the right to check immigration status. And it all leads to a kind of malaise. And many are trying hard to understand the anger, the resentment, and the racism that seems to be roiling in our country. So we wanted to begin an exploration of what's driving this threat. And I'm joined now in the studio of NPR New York by Kai Wright. He's an editor for colorlines.com and a fellow at the Nation Institute. Hey, Kai.
Howdy.
And by Dr. Hamid Dabashi. He's an internationally renowned cultural critic and an award-winning author and professor at Columbia University, originally from Iran. Welcome to the program, Professor.
Thanks for having me.
And in Los Angeles, we have Josefina Lopez. She's an author and a playwright and a screenwriter. You will probably know her because she wrote Real Women Have Curves, both the play and the movie. Welcome back, Josefina.
Gracias. Thank you for having me.
All right. So I'm going to throw out these terms. And actually, Kai, we'll start with you. Immigration, Arizona, mosque debate, terrorism, distrust of Obama, the Glenn Beck demonstration. So when you hear all of those things put together, what comes to mind when you hear that?
Midterm elections.
Exactly.
You know, I think there are big reasons and small reasons when we get into these moments. And I think the driving small reason right now is it's August. The Republican Party is working hard to regain control of Capitol Hill. And the very clear playbook that it has gone with this year has been to redouble its efforts to incite its base, which is Southern white men. And that's different from what they've been doing really even in the last couple of years. And so they've taken every opportunity to tap into that. And so we've seen both through the party itself and through its many surrogates, we've seen a real amplification of some of these issues.
So when you're sitting there in your room, in your office, and you're watching some of these images, does your mind just say, no, listen, don't get emotionally upset about what you're seeing or what this signifies, because this is all just, you know, a political theater that is, you know, involving the American media, corporate media, and, you know, hold tight?
Well, no, I do get quite upset. I think that the driver is electoral politics, but I think the consequences are much larger than electoral politics. And the things that allow this kind of hate speech to have resonance from both, again, the party and its surrogates, is that it's tapping into some troubling things in our culture that I think are about the economic times we're at the cultural moment we're at. Those things, the consequences and the things that allow it to happen, those are deeply troubling.
So, Professor Dabashi, you have a perspective. You also have a worldwide perspective. You've traveled around the world. You speak all of these languages. So when you hear those things that I put out there, what's the link for you? Is there a link?
Yes. I mean, I must start by concurring with Kai. Yes, it's midterm election, but that's short term. There is more kind of midterm elements that has to do with the election of the first African-American as the president, which is quite anxiety-provoking for a society that imagines itself having a whiteness at the center.
But at the same time, Professor, you know, after President Obama was elected, it wasn't as if you felt like only a tiny part of the country was happy about it. You had people who said, I'm a Republican, and I'm thrilled about this. I'm happy. So,
No. I have absolutely no reason to doubt the euphoria of the last presidential election. But also, there's a long term, which is the history of this country, which is very bizarre, that the country that is built by immigrants has this anti-immigrant anxiety.
But we've been here. I mean, how many times can we possibly say this? And yet, here we are yet again.
As I said, it's a paradox. But it's a paradox that by virtue of none of us being native to this land, the only Native Americans are Native Americans. There is this anxiety of possession created by this social construction of something called whiteness. Doesn't exist. White America doesn't exist. It's a figment of imagination. By virtue of creating all these peripheries, Latino Americans, African Americans, Jewish Americans, Muslim Americans, you create a fictive center that imagines itself white and then goes there. But if you went to Washington Mall last week and you asked people, so what kind of a white are you? You know, Jewish American, Italian American, Irish American, Swedish American, you see, it begins to dissolve. But it is a very powerful imagination that holds itself. And then in moments of anxiety, it pops up in Minuteman, in the South, in these legislations in Arizona, in the sentiments against the cultural center near the Ground Zero. It has multiple manifestations, but at the center of it remains a central paradox in American cultural identity, which is the fact that it is made of immigrants, yet wary of immigrants.
So, Josefina, you're in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, L.A. is one of those places where a lot of times, at least on the East Coast, there's a sense of like, well, you know, L.A.'s, you know, they face this all the time because there's racial tension there and there are communities that are a little bit more segregated than you feel, for example, let's say, like in a place like New York. Well, is that the case or is the feeling in L.A. and on the West Coast the same, this kind of like, oh, my God, what's going on with our country?
Well, we are very segregated, and I think the freeway systems ensure that that happened. For example, I grew up in Boyle Heights. You never have to go to Boyle Heights because there's a freeway that cut right through it, so you never have to stop there. So, yes, there is that. I do feel very lucky, though, that I'm in Los Angeles because Latinos are the majority. We are, however, invisible, which is a really ironic thing because we're the majority, and yet in film, cinema, we don't exist. And so it is kind of weird, but there is, I do feel there's a lot more tolerance because we have a Latino mayor. So I'm very optimistic about Los Angeles, you know, becoming an ideal model city for the rest of the U.S. But there is a lot of hate talk, you know, and it's interesting.
Is there a lot, like, do you hear it a lot?
I actually have spent the last months listening to a lot of conservative radio talk shows because I was doing research for a play. I wrote a play called Detained in the Desert, which is about hate talk and how hate talk promotes hate crimes. So I do listen to a lot of it. And first you're shocked, and then you just go, wow, these people are really scared. Like, I really go, wow, you know, perro que ladra no muerde, you know. And so for
we
me,
need
I would
to translate that.
I know. It's like a dog that barks doesn't bite. And so I go, when people are really barking and you get intimidated and you get scared and people, you kind of go, oh, it's because they're really afraid. You know, the census came out, you know, just recently, and the numbers confirm, you know, Latinos are the majority. If we're really going to be the majority, then I think people probably are really scared. But then on the other hand, I go, if we're really going to be the majority and we're all going to be related by blood, then what's the problem? Let's get the party started now.
I mean, I think there really is a
Well, but there is something to be said about that, right? Which is, I talk a lot about organic diversity because actually, if you think about it, you know, we're kind of living it already. But there is something, and I'm glad that you said that, Josefina. We need to understand that there is a lot of fear. Because, for example, you might have people who are sane, and they are as American as any of us, right? They don't have ownership of that, who are saying, you know what is happening to my country? People who broke the law knowingly are in this country and no one's doing anything about it. And people are saying, you know what? Yes, the good old days for me mean a man and a woman getting married. And now we have an African-American president. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what the future looks like. I'm scared.
I think it's, Maria, is growing pain. As a society, as a culture, we are growing. And these are the growing pains of a society. And if you compare us to European society, we're infinitely ahead of them. Look at the issue of anti-Muslim sentiments. For example, the scarf. Muslim women who want to wear a scarf, they wear it on campuses, work, etc. is absolutely no issue. And it is a huge issue in Europe. So we have to, in a way, count our blessing, number one, built on our strength, built on people are out in the streets demonstrating against discriminatory legislations in Arizona that have nothing to do with their particular ghetto. That is the fact that there is no ghetto, intellectually, morally, etc. And in terms of something about the not being represented in Hollywood that Josefina was mentioning, who cares? This is the age of new media. Look at the Facebooks, look at the Twitters, look at the YouTube. That is, we have alternative media in which this society and the multiple aspects of it are expressing themselves.
You have to separate that policymaking from this broader cultural conversation that we've largely been talking about. They're related, but they're two separate things and have separate drivers. And I think there are structural things that's driving this sort of feeling like we're in a moment of hate and divisiveness. And those structural things, I don't think are growing pains. I think they're shrinking pains in some ways, I have to say.
It's about the economy.
I think it's about the economy. So I spent a lot of time this winter, reporting on the census down in Houston, which is exactly the kind of city that Josefina was talking about, where the Houston-Dallas-San Antonio triangle is probably in and of itself the fastest growing state in the country. And it's entirely the result of people of color, largely foreign-born people of color, but also U.S.-born.
And from everywhere.
Migrating to that area. And so there's a lot of fear, not just amongst whites, but amongst those people of color as well. We're all a little afraid right now because we have 10% unemployment, because we have a record number of people literally starving. And people need an explanation for that instability. And so here's where we're talking about some of these nuts and bolts structural things. There has been very little voice out there articulating something about that instability from a progressive perspective that has been saying, you know, it feels troublesome now, but the thing that's going to save us, the thing that's going to make us strong is rallying together and having a diverse economy full of diverse people from all over the world. Nobody's saying that. But what they are saying, where you do hear a huge loud voice, is from the Republican Party that is trying to retake Congress, that is saying we are unstable because of all of these people of color coming into the country. We are unstable because of this black president. We are unstable because of all of these divisive things.
There is a shrinking of the mind as well. You know, with the economy shrinking, people are also shrinking their mind because in Arizona, they're not just, you know, racially profiling people or trying to pass that law, but they're also passing HB, where they're trying to ban ethnic studies.
Right.
I think we need to learn about other people's cultures. And I think that's also what's behind the mosque and the whole controversy, is the fact that people do not want to expand themselves and realize that we cannot act as though we are alone, the only country on this planet, that we cannot act that way anymore.
We're speaking to Professor Hamid Dabashi, playwright Josefina Lopez, and writer Kai Wright. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back in a minute. Quédense con nosotros. Stay with us for more conversación.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
Come, make love for your somebody.
Don't be fun.
You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. We're back now with our conversation about fear, racism, and hope in America, and how we can change the conversation. Our guests are Josefina Lopez, an author and playwright, Dr. Hamid Dabashi, an Iranian-American author and internationally renowned cultural critic, and Kai Wright, an author and editor at colorlines.com. So, Josefina, if you know, because you said that you have spent some time as you're writing this play that takes place in the Arizona desert and you spent time listening to radio that uses some hate speech, where do you find the hope in babies being born, Josefina? Is that
exactly
it? Tell me the story about where
make
you
find love,
hope.
Not war, right?
But where when you get to the malaise of, oh my God, the way people are speaking to each other, hate speech, the lack of a feeling perhaps that there isn't a leadership here. So you find hope by doing what, Josefina?
You know what?
Lopez?
It's inevitable a change happens. So whether I'm here to fight for it or not, it's going to happen. And even though I don't like the way things are, I know that 20 years ago, things were worse because people couldn't even march on the street and declare that they're undocumented. To me, that was spectacular. Like, wow, I grew up feeling like I should be ashamed because I was undocumented. You know, when I heard that Susan B. Anthony died before women got the right to vote, I go, wow, I may not be around to see the change in progress, but I must fight for my great-great-granddaughter. I must fight for the hundreds of babies that, that will be born. So that's what gives me hope, is that this fight is not just for me in my lifetime, that it's for somebody else that I do not know, and that kind of love is what fuels me.
When you need to be hopeful, Kai, what do you do?
I find hope because everywhere you look, you see people, Americans, New Yorkers, human beings coming together and creating community. And I think that's the piece that holds everything together and that is unstoppable. The dream activists, the young college students who are saying, yeah, we're undocumented, but we are fueling this country, in fact, and we refuse to be hidden. Mm-hmm. And chaining themselves together in congressional offices in intersections and out in Los Angeles, that kind of thing, and have been so successful that they are actually, that bill may very well pass this session. They're
forcing it. But then you should also feel equally proud and happy about the fact that Glenn Beck was able to organize a demonstration with thousands of people?
I think to see thousands of people coming together for some purpose on the mall, actually I do appreciate the fact of that community. And I think that this is exactly gets me back to my leadership point, is that those thousands of people are not evil. Those are thousands of people who are really anxious about where we're at economically, about where we're at culturally, and they have the right to be. I'm anxious too. We have very real anxieties. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I hold President Obama to task on this is that he is not standing up to lead an answer to that, because those thousands of people are looking for someone to follow. They're looking for answers to their justified anxiety.
I'm absolutely convinced, Maria, that in terms of means of mass communication, we are in a moment of sea changes, a sort of epistemic shift, what is happening. I have 2,000 plus friends on my Facebook. As soon as I get home, I update my status that I was in a program with Maria Hinojosa, you know, and those 2,000 friends, they have another 2,000 friends. So the power of Hollywood, corporate media, New York Times, CNN, is not what used to be. That is, in terms, that is the combination right of grassroots movements.
Well, thank you. We'll end on that thought. Thank you so much. Kai Wright is an editor for colorlines.com. Professor Hamid Dabashi is an internationally renowned cultural critic and a professor at Columbia University. And Josefina Lopez is an author and playwright. Her most recent play is Detained in the Desert. It will premiere in October in Los Angeles. And you can hear more of our conversation on our website at latinousa.org. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ahora, algo un poco más personal. Some personal thoughts now. I have two kids in adolescence, and we all know what that's like. Remember those out-of-control hormones? Remember fighting with your siblings and with just about everyone? Well, there was a lot of that going on this summer between my two kids, who actually adore each other. but who find themselves fighting over pettiness minutes after they wake up. Their godmother came and spent a week on vacation with us. And on that first day, she said we were going to use the Rodney King slogan to make things work. Can't we all just get along? Quoting Rodney King to my kids meant we needed to fill them in on who he was, which brought back memories of watching Los Angeles go up in flames after the LA police verdict. I remember back then crying, feeling so helpless. Race riots in the 1990s? How could that be? That was what the 1960s had been about. I suppose remembering Los Angeles in flames is helpful at a time like this in our country, only because it means maybe we haven't hit rock bottom. Things could be worse. But even those a generation or two older than me are saying that what we're living through now feels different. One progressive Texan New Yorker said, "I grew up with overt racism in the 1950s. I know what that looks like. But it's worse now, because when did it suddenly become socially acceptable to be racist?" 9 years ago, in 2001, just around this time of year, there was a lot of malaise going on as well. Remember? George Bush became president through a process many Americans doubted was honest, and the Taliban in Afghanistan had just destroyed the ancient Buddhist statues. And then, 9 years ago, a horrific assault on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon made our country, based on divisions, become united in a way I had never experienced before. Right after 9/11, no one was fighting amongst each other. Remember? And people across America declared themselves proud New Yorkers, a code word for a city of healing, of diversity, of sadness, and of hope. How did we squander all of that goodwill, not only among New Yorkers, but among Americans and the world? So, I'll ask it again, even if it feels redundant or trite. Can't we all just get along? Seeing that no one is leaving this country en masse, neither the Mexicanos, nor the Muslims, nor the gay folks. No one. So, like I said to my kids a lot this summer, can't we all just get along? Or do we prefer to just be at each other's throats and rip each other to shreds with words and deeds? My kids are playing together in their room now as I write this. I can hear them laughing, and I'm hopeful. And for this week, that's Latino USA. The program is a production of The Futuro Media Group in association with KUT Austin. You can listen to the show on demand at latinousa.org, and you can also follow us on Twitter, where we are LatinoUSA. All one word. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of EdUtopia, a source of what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finish and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And from LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 800-555-TREE. This is NPR.